All right. Welcome. If you're here for the first time, hope you're enjoying your morning already. The music was just beautiful, beautiful. Thank you, band. Most people I talk to love the idea of having a tight group of people to do life with. I never really talk to anyone who says, no, I wouldn't want that. Most that I talk to are saying, I love the thought of having a community that is safe and committed to each other, where you can be real and honest. You don't have to pretend. Where there's high levels of mutual awareness between us and reciprocity. It's not just one side. It's not just me doing everything for them, but it's them doing stuff for us. It's reciprocal. Love that idea. But what does it take to experience that? Is this something that you actually have the power to control? Can you control the quality of the community that you're surrounded by? Or is it just blind luck that you stumble into the people that are in your life and, man, hopefully they'll be good friends to you and you'll be good friends to them? Is it like that? You kind of what you get is what you get. You move into a neighborhood and the neighbors around you, well, if they're nice, great. And if not, oh, well, sucks to be me. The people you work with, I'm convinced more than ever that luck doesn't build meaningful community. I believe there are some very specific skill sets and group patterns of behavior that when understood and when applied, we can unlock the possibilities of experiencing deeper levels of community in our lives. It's a matter of understanding the group patterns, behavior, the skill sets needed. When that happens, I think community like we never thought possible is available. Last week, Vince asked you to think deeply about the community, the level of community that you're currently experienced. I would have loved to just have walked through the community in the middle of that and just asked, like, he asked you to rate your community, rate it on a scale of 1 to 10. Where is it? I would have loved to have heard those answers. I know I was thinking hard about the level of community that I experience right now and the friendships, the people in my life. Question, would you know what it would take to make it better? If you gave yourself a 6.5, 7.5 out of 10, would you know what it would take to make it an 8? Do you know what may be keeping it from becoming more than it is? This week, I want to talk about four levels of community. And I want to talk about a few of the corresponding behaviors, the skill sets that seem to be required to move into deeper levels of community. What Scott Peck calls true community. I don't know if you're familiar with Scott Peck. He's a psychologist, well-known author, really popular in decades ago. His work is phenomenal. We did a base camp series on levels of spirituality over the past couple years. That was Scott Peck. Well, not only his work, but we borrowed heavily from his work. The guy was brilliant. But when it comes to the spiritual journey, I think this is incredibly important stuff. I'll share my opinion. I believe that there is no characteristic more defining of a Christ follower, of a truly spiritual person, than the quality of your relationships. I believe there is no more defining characteristic of a Christ follower or a truly spiritual person than the quality of their relationships. It was Jesus who said, "Let me give you one new commandment. Love one another. In the same way that I have been loving you, love one another." Then he says this. He says, "Everyone will know that you're my disciple, that you're tied into what I'm about when they see your love for each other." He doesn't say, oh, you know what? They'll quiz you on your beliefs. And when they do, you better know this and this. No, no, no. He says, forget all that. Love one another. That will be the mark. They'll know, whoa, that person's tied into that guy. It was 1 John In the Bible, it says, if anyone says, I love God and hates his brother, he's a liar. Pretty important stuff we're talking about here over the next 2 weeks. Quality of our relationships in a group setting, our community. I just did a wedding Thursday night. Weird time to do it. Weddings are an interesting thing, aren't they? Usually two large groups of people, or small, it doesn't, depends, coming together, one side from the brides, one side from the grooms. They're coming and merging around this wedding event. Many of them in the room have never met people sitting on the other side of the aisle. Long before that event happens, guest lists are determined. Every word or action often is kind of carefully chosen to ensure that no invited guest feels left out or offended. I mean, even table sitting, seating arrangements are weighed out carefully. If you've been a part of that process, who should we put with them? Oh, don't put them. Right? It's all kind of choreographed so carefully. It's always fascinating when one side of the equation comes from more of a real strict religious background, while the other side, I mean, comes from no religious background. This is funny. It's not funny, but it's interesting. The bride and groom are like stressed. They're like, how is this all, how are our families going to get along? And they have to think through, all right, whose family traditions around weddings are going to win? Right? You've maybe seen this. Well, our family traditionally don't drink and don't dance. Well, who wins? And so there's all this wrestling, trying to figure out, okay, well, maybe if we can just do this, and then they'll be okay. And then when you get to the wedding, it's interesting watching. Everyone is on their best behavior, right? Everyone's really trying. Everyone's smiling. You can tell the guys that never wear suits, they clean up well. You know, they're looking stiff as anything. You know, they're kind of like, oh, get me out of this thing. Lots of pleasantries. Hi, oh, it's nice to meet you. I mean, everyone's trying, right? Everyone wanting to make a strong impression, first impression, be on their best behavior. Why? Because they want to make the day and the moment special for this couple. So often I come to the end of a wedding, the ceremony, the reception. I look at the wedding couple, all the stress, all the worry, all the wondering, how is this all going to come together? And there's this sigh and this celebration that, man, everyone got along. Huh. Not every time, but many times. The wedding environment is a picture that describes pretty well that first level of community. The first level of community. What psychologist and well-respected author Scott Peck says, he describes as pseudo-community. That's the first level, he says. I think he calls it this because at this first level, there's almost a sense that you're experiencing what true community feels like. This everyone getting along, everyone smiling, everyone, even the most unlikely characters, fitting in. Peaceful, pleasant cooperation. Very little bickering or fighting. Everyone willing to go with the flow. You'll see this level of peaceful, almost joyful cooperation at the early stages of almost any community. You move into a neighborhood and they throw a block party. Hi, neighbor. Hi, nice to meet you. Everyone's smiling. Hi, I wanted you to meet my kids. Everyone's putting on their best behavior. You walk into church on Sunday. Some of you are new. What are you doing? Hi. You're not coming in. No, everyone's kind of putting on their smiling best coming in. Everyone's going with the flow, but almost anyone, listen to me, almost anyone can go with the flow for a day. Isn't it true? I'll tell you right now, weddings would look a lot different if they got stretched out over 5 or 7 days, wouldn't they? Oh, now we're getting to the good stuff, right? That pleasant, surreal sense of community, that would change drastically. You know, at some point, someone says, hey, you know what? That's fine that they don't drink. That's fine that we didn't drink that first day. But you know what? I enjoy my wine. I enjoy my scotch. I'm making a liquor run, a store run. Anyone? What do you want? Let's go. You know what? That's fine. You guys don't like to dance, but we come from a long lineage of square dancers, and we put it on. We're going for it. We'll be over there. At some point in life, in any group, going with the flow is going to become difficult for some. And they're going to decide not to do it. Not to be difficult. Not just because they want to be the fly in the ointment. But because what's working for them, or what's working for everyone else, doesn't necessarily fit them or work for them. Everyone in Joe, different story, everyone in Joe's family, every year, everyone in the family went to his mom's house for Christmas Eve. It was the ritual. It was a routine. Show up at 6, big meal. They would go out after and open one present. They'd have some drinks, play some games. It was just the way it had always been done. One year, Joe brings his new girlfriend. Smiling faces. I want you to meet Susie. Susie's like, wow, your family's so nice. And Christmas Eve, we do this. Whoa, this is awesome. And so they played and they had some drinks. They ate and they opened the present. And then the next year rolled around. And there was Susie again going, woo. And everyone had fun and loved it. But year 3, now married, Susie says, you know, Joe, it's good, but I would like it if we could kind of develop our own tradition. How about we tell your family that we just do this like maybe every second year, and then we can do our own thing? Like my family's kind of feeling bummed out because I haven't been over there. And Joe says, okay. Do you want to tell Mom? Like, something tells me some of you have been here, right? When the news broke, it got a little messy. Joe's sister, of all people, was the one that really came unglued, really upset. This happens in like smaller groups, like mom's groups. I've heard the stories, a bunch of moms all wanting to support one another, sit around the room and share their stories. One mom says, my kid is just not sleeping at night. I don't know what the problem is. And I've tried it. And one mom says, I'll tell you exactly what you need to do. We were there. And I read this book. You need to let that kid cry. When we did, lights out. All our kids, been amazing sleepers ever since. Another woman says, excuse me? I tried that. And then I found out after letting my kid cry for a long time that something else was wrong. Let me tell you something. You let your kid cry and you're being irresponsible. Okay. Anyways, tension. I was scrolling through Facebook a few weeks ago. One of my friends had posted a progressive Christian article on Facebook in response to the Nashville statement. Anyone familiar with the Nashville statement? This is quite interesting. Southern Baptists down the state circulated a statement about their spiritual beliefs, specifically regarding sexuality. According to their understanding and interpretation of the Bible, the statement specifically opposed any consideration of sexual orientation, any discussion around that, or the possibility of that even being an issue or a possibility, and categorically condemning all LGBTQ sexuality. Just said, we're not having it, we believe it's wrong. And so we're coming out and making sure everyone understands our stance against this. Now, I'm not here to make any political statement. I'm just saying that was what the national statement is. Came out a few weeks back, or actually this summer, August. And so my friend posts a statement, not written by him, but someone that he heard of, that was in opposition to that. It was just contrasting it. It was their own statement that offered a different Christian viewpoint, countering the Nashville statement. And in fact, affirming LGBTQ couples and people part of that community. And he posts a statement, and then on the top he says, "For all those who have found your belief system widening and becoming more inclusive, bending towards love, here's a way for you to express that you love people more than doctrine." Now I remember, as I was scrolling through, drinking my coffee, going, "Ooh, oh boy. That is a hot button." And I know him and the circle that we come from. I went, "Oh boy, this is going to be interesting." Sure enough, it didn't take long. I could just tell by the timestamp on the comments, which now were... they start jumping in. Some that were very upset. One guy responded, "Greg, I love you like a brother, but man, you are way offside here. You're way off base." Another posted, "Wow, Greg. Wow. 4 question marks. What the?" So Greg responds respectfully. He says, "I hope you can understand my heart in posting this. I'm standing up for friends and family and for my personal beliefs." To which the person responded, "What about standing up for what is right?" I started scrolling down, man, my heart began to race. I'm like, "Oh man, I don't know how this all went." Tension, conflict. Let me ask you something. Have you ever felt afraid to be truly honest with the community of people you love? You felt the need to hide something from them because if you were honest, if they found out what you honestly thought or believed, you knew it would create tension, awkwardness, conflict. Perhaps it was an opposing matter, opinion on something, where someone says something, really point of fact, says, "No, this is the way it is." And you're going, "Oh, I don't really agree with that, but..." Maybe it's a belief. Maybe it's a mistake you made, something from your past. And you're going, "Well, I could actually share my story about that, but I don't want them knowing that. Because that would..." So you just keep it to yourself. Because you don't want to wreck things. You don't want to disrupt the community. The love. Let's keep the love alive in the room. Let's not get all tense here, ladies. Come on, mom. Come on, sister. Have you ever felt that way? I know I have. I have felt that many times. Listen to me. When someone is willing and able to be honest about something that goes against what everyone else in the group seems to want, to believe, to think, when someone goes against what everyone else is thinking, as counterintuitive as this may seem, that action of saying, "Here's a different thought," is actually a shift. You begin to make a shift to a new level of community. Let me repeat that again. When someone says something that everyone else perhaps doesn't like, disagrees with, when everyone is doing this one thing and someone stands up and says, "Yeah, I don't want to do that. That's not really my gig." That action is taking you into the next level of community. It can mark a shift What's interesting, Scott Peck calls this next level chaos. This is fantastic. You go from pseudo-community, hey, let's just all get along, everyone's going with the flow, to chaos. It's chaotic because when individual differences surface within the group, it can have a way of bringing out others who feel the need to heal or convert. I just found this so fascinating. I'm going, yes! People, the healers and the converters stand up and go, excuse me? Pardon me, what did you say? It's Joe's sister who got upset and said to Joe, what are you doing? Like, seriously, here's the one day of the year we ask of our family to come together. And you can't even do that? You're kidding me. You should be embarrassed. I thought you loved Mom. There, these moms are, and there's probably a camp within them. They're saying, yeah, let the baby cry. But there's some going, no way. There's some that are saying, you better let that baby cry. The healers who are trying to come in and fix. Let's fix this story. Let's fix you. You're not getting your sleep? Come here. I got the remedy. Here's what you're going to do. If you go, I'm not really into that. Pardon me? The friends weighing in online, saying things like, what about doing what's right? Wow. That's like kind of saying, in case you didn't know it, there aren't three doors to choose from. There's door number one. It's my door. What is that? Those efforts are to convert, to heal, to fix. Scott Peck says they're almost always the best intentions behind them. They're going, man, I want you to experience the good thing that I have. I want you to feel this thing that I've got, and I want to help you see it. They dig in. These healers and these converters have a tough time, obviously, with people who are determined to do things differently or to believe things differently, who see the world differently. It bothers them. Often well-intentioned, but so often misguided in their approach. For most of my life, the healers and the converters were the ones who had me hiding parts of my life that I knew would react negatively to things that I knew they didn't want to hear me say or think or believe. I knew who they were in my life. Perhaps you have some in your life. Influential voices that don't like to take no for an answer, that have strong opinions, have strong ideals, and you don't want to disappoint them perhaps. You don't want to let them down. You love it when they look at you and say, oh man, I'm proud of you. You love that. Often these healers and converters are the people you respect the most. You care what they say. When they speak up, you're like, I don't want to disagree right now. I am one who has learned to go with the flow. To say things, to do the things, to be the person that other people have wanted to be. I am a classic people pleaser. I need my own support group for that. Doing a lot of work on it. So I've had to tell you off after the service. Just know it's spiritual work. When I first saw Greg's post the other day, I thought to myself, Greg, why? Why do you do that? Do you think it's productive to poke the bear like that? You know they're sitting there. You know they're going to jump up and they're going to say things. This is going to bring them out of the woodwork. You don't want them to fight with them. They're not listening to you. And they're going to ridicule you. I remember just thinking, I don't think that's productive. In my mind, I'm thinking, why don't you just go about your life? Just hold your beliefs privately. Go with the flow. Don't get them all stirred up. What they believe is what they believe. You know what you believe. You don't have to speak up about it. It sounds so strange when I'm saying this right now, but that's what was going through my head. Enter Brené Brown. How many are familiar with Brené Brown? Okay. So a few weeks ago, her latest book released. And I picked it up. Interestingly, it was all about belonging, finding true belonging in your life. I'm telling you right now, this book is blowing my mind. My mind. She comes out early on in the book and says that you will never experience a sense of true belonging with any community of people until you learn to belong to yourself. I was reading that, I'm going, what? Learn to belong to yourself. She says, until you are willing to stand alone in your decisions and your beliefs despite your fear of criticism and rejection. I'm reading this as I'm thinking about Scott Peck's pseudo-community to chaos. And it is just ringing the bell. Until you are willing to stand up and say, that's not me, I'm sorry. I feel this way. This is who I am. Until you're willing to be honest with the people in your life, regardless of whether they like it or not, whether they get angry and want to fight, or they get quiet and awkward and don't know what to say to you, whether they try to fix you or heal you or convert you once you've been honest, doesn't matter. Until you can belong to yourself with the community of people that you are wanting to become close to, you will stay in pseudo-community. It's weird, isn't it? It's counterintuitive. In order to more fully connect with the people in your life, you need to be willing to upset them even by being honest, by being true to who you are. For a people pleaser, this is not good news. But I'm telling you right now, as I've been preparing this message, as I've been poring over this over the last number of weeks, I realize how shallow much of my community is. Why? Because I'm very scared to be open about who I really am with some of them. And I have a feeling that my connection with them is only as deep as I am similar to them. Two 2,000 years ago in ancient Israel, a good spiritual rabbi never hung out with non-spiritual, non-Jewish people. You didn't do that. You never hung out with people of bad reputation, questionable individuals in the society or community, people of known trouble. There was kind of this belief that your spirituality, your connection with God would be contaminated if you were close to them, if you're hanging out with them, if you're interacting with them. Something would rub off and it would taint you. But something about that belief didn't wash with Jesus. He didn't buy it. Scripture records numerous times when Jesus would get close, he would touch, he would talk, he would interact with people he should never have been interacting with as a good Jewish rabbi. Scripture records a time when Jesus was sitting with these kind of riffraff. Riffraff. Questionable people, he's sitting with them. I don't know, we don't know much about that, but I picture him sitting in this seedy bar, hanging out with them. I'll have another one. We're just getting into it. Yeah, you have to get going? No? Okay, good, I'm good. All right, let's sit. And these guys sitting around, and I'm being in this important conversation, and I can see his disciples growing uncomfortable. I could just see them going, "We shouldn't be here. We shouldn't be here, Jesus." I can see them kind of exiting, being outside. It says that these religious leaders show up. They know that Jesus is inside. They're seeing who he's with. They're going, they're talking to his followers. The guys that are closest to Jesus are going, "What's he doing in there?" Jesus didn't flinch. It's like he turned to them and he said, "This is me. This is what I'm about. These are the people I'm here for. Deal with it." Not flinching. Time and time again. John and the Pharisees' disciples, they all fast. Jesus, yours don't. What's going on? "Yeah, well," gives his rationale. "Yeah, I don't. We don't. This is why. We're not supposed to be doing any work on the Sabbath. You just did, Jesus. Yeah, deal with it." He had such a deep sense of who he was, what he operated around, his core values, his beliefs. He was one that would be constantly poking the bear. There's times when people were ready to kill him. He'd have to slip out of the crowd, maybe. He seemed to be so clear on his identity, his values, his personal sense of right and wrong, his preferences, his personal needs. Never apologizing. Never worried about someone's nose getting out of joint. Continually said and did things that poked them. The healers and the converters would show up wanting to either get him to change what he's thinking or to punish him so that no one else would follow him. I admire that. I am strengthened by that. I watch how he operated with such a clear sense of identity. I go, "Oh, I need that." I admire people in this community who I've watched do this. There's some of you who have had to face huge consequences when you decided to be honest. Some of your stories are so inspiring. At some point you said, "This isn't working for me." You spoke up and the healers and the converters showed up on your doorstep. Sometimes it was your most loved family, respected leaders, your siblings, your best friends. And the awkward and the heated conversations and the tears, the misunderstandings and then the silence. But in the middle of the chaos, you began to experience the freedom that comes. The relief that comes through that vulnerability. The joy of no longer having to hide. The dignity of living your truth. In the midst of that chaos, you began to see who in your community were willing to stay and to accept you, to love you. Even if they didn't like what you were saying, even if they didn't understand all that you were doing, they stayed. And it was awkward, but you begin to see, wow, a new level of community emerging. Oh, when I hear some of your stories, deep down inside, I'm thinking, "Jeff, come on." I regret that many times I've given in to fear of criticism or rejection. I've refused to be true to myself, to my values and my beliefs, to somehow keep those healers and those converters at bay. I don't want to deal with them. I don't want to deal with conflict. Sometimes I get duped into thinking, no, I need community. Not realizing that I'm settling for something less than true community. More than ever, I'm convinced if I want to experience deep, rich community, it's going to begin by me being honest with myself, belonging to myself. I realize there are some in this room this morning. I know some of you. You have no problem making your own decisions. You have a very clear sense of your identity. You don't give a rip what anyone says. You never struggled with this. It's just like, oh, hello. I will do what I want when I want. And if you've got a problem with it, I'll tell you where you can go to. So there are some people within our community that have such a clear... It's like, yeah, I have no problem doing this, Jeff. Hello. 5 stars. Perhaps some of you in that department maybe would fall more into the healer, converter category. I'm not talking to you guys this morning. I'm waiting for next week. We're going to go there, all right? This morning, this is all about those who are often the peacemakers, the people who are inclined not to rock the boat, but really want to go with the flow. Those are commonly the 9s on the Enneagram, or the 2s, the helpers, maybe the 3s, the performers. There's half of the 6s can be this way. They operate out of a lot of fear. Don't want to. If you're an S or an I on the DISC profile, there are some of us that are pre-wired to struggle with what I'm talking about this morning, because we don't like conflict and we love for people to be happy around us. If this is you this morning, if you're hearing me, would you be willing to look carefully at the decisions you're making in your life right now? To ask yourself, who's making my decisions? Is the way I am living, is what I'm spending my money on and my time on, is the way I'm living really a reflection of me and my beliefs and my values, my dreams? Or is someone else arbitrarily making my decisions for me? Are there parts of your life that you've kept hidden? Where perhaps the shame has buried you over? You don't feel that your dreams and your values are as worthwhile as someone else's. Maybe there's chapters of your life you're so ashamed of, you just keep it all down here. And you allow those voices to just basically dictate who you are. And somehow it just keeps you distant and disconnected, because you're never really yourself. Let me ask you something. What kind of community is it if you have to be someone else in order to get the love from the people around you? But if you will step into the chaos, if you'll learn to belong to yourself, get in touch with who you are, your voice, one day, listen to me, one day you will have people in your life who will see you exactly as you are. All of you, all of me, warts and all. And go, I choose to be with you. I want you in my life. One day, if you can jump into the chaos, if you can climb through this difficult step of saying, let me be honest with you. One day it will lead to having a community of people around you that go, oh, I know all about him. And I love him. I'm good with that. I don't have to understand him. I don't have to agree with him. I love him. Brené Brown wrote what she called the Manifesto of the Brave and Brokenhearted. She said, there is no greater threat to the critics and the cynics and fearmongers than those of us who are willing to fall because we have learned how to rise. With skinned knees and bruised hearts, we choose owning our stories of struggle over hiding, over hustling, over pretending. When we deny our stories, they define us. When we run from struggle, we are never free. So we turn toward truth and we look it in the eye. We will not be characters in our stories, not villains, not victims, not even heroes. We're not just these little pawns in the story that in life ended up happening. No. We are the authors of our lives. We write our own daring endings. We craft love from heartbreak. We compassion from shame, grace from disappointment, courage from failure. Showing up is our power. Story is our way home. Truth is our song. We are brave. We are the brave and brokenhearted. We are rising strong. This morning, if you are one who struggles, be honest about your story. Worried about the healers and the converters, it's time. Time to consider the process of belonging to yourself. I want to challenge you this morning to have an honest conversation this week. Just with you. I want you to think about the healers and the converters in your life. I want you to think about the parts of you that you're doing and living out that may not be true to you. And I want you to start considering what it might take to change that. Next week, we're going to talk about the conversations. I just invite you this week, take a step toward true community by belonging to yourself.